to see everyone back here with us this evening. If you looked at the bulletin, you're probably expecting a sermon concerning mercy this evening. But as sometimes folks are wont to do, I changed my mind. We're going to talk about mercy next Sunday, next Sunday morning. I felt that there were a couple things that I wanted to accomplish with that sermon that wouldn't necessarily be able to have time to do on a Sunday night. So be prepared for that one next week. If you will, I want you to be turning in your Bibles with me to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. And I want us to look together at verses 14 through 16. It's a passage that I hope that we are familiar with, one that has been often quoted, I'm sure, most especially as we talk to young people. In Matthew chapter 5, and let's back up to verse 13 for this particular passage. Jesus says here, "Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden underfoot of men." Verse 14, "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house." Jesus goes on to say in verse 16, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." Friends, have you stopped lately to think about the influence or the example that you are setting for those around you? And what effect it has on those that see that example that you are setting and the influence that you are exerting upon them? Friends, in our day and time, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a celebrity, and me being a sports nut, looking at these sports celebrities, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard one of them say, "I'm not a role model." Friends, like it or not, yes, they are. They are put in the spotlight, and they have to understand that whatever they do, good or bad, it's going to be seen, and to some degree, it's going to be imitated. Now, friends, as you and I are the Lord's church, we have to understand that we cannot be neutral when it comes to our influence upon those around us. You're either having at any given time a good influence or a bad influence. Now, it's up to you as to which one it's going to be at any given time. So, friends, I want us to look at what Christ says here in Matthew chapter 5, particularly 14 through 16, not to exclude verse 13. For that's all in the same context. As Christians, we are to be salt. We are to add flavor, if you will, to those around us. But he says there, as you see there in verse 13, if the salt has lost its savor, if it's not exerting the influence that it should, then what good is it but to be thrown out and trodden under the foot of men? He goes on and gives us another analogy, as we've already read. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. If you leave San Angelo tonight, and you go somewhere and you come back after dark, what's the first hint that you're coming close to the city of San Angelo? It's going to be the lights, isn't it? Or if you go somewhere else after dark, if you go toward even a town as small as Merton, what are you going to see first before you ever get there? You'll see the lights. That's what Jesus is talking about. Even during those days when they didn't have electricity, they had street lights running down every street, you could see the city long before you got there because of the lights. A city set on a hill cannot be hid. He goes on in the next verse to say, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel. What good does a candle do? What good does a lamp do if we light it and then we cover it with a basket? Who's it giving light to? No one. But rather, he says, they put it on a candlestick and it gives light to how many? All that are in the house. You see, friends, that light has influence on those around it. And as a Christian, notice there that Jesus is talking to his disciples, each individual follower. And he says, notice the personal pronoun, ye or you are that light. You are that city. You are that salt. Friends, whether we intend to or not, we're going to be setting an example. We're going to be exerting influence on those around us. Now, how are we going to use it? I want us to look at three things together tonight, very briefly. concerning our examples and influence. And maybe we can come to a better understanding of what it is that we are to do as we go out these doors each week. As we come together on Sundays, I hope that each time we come together that our batteries are recharged and we have the want to and the zeal to go and live as Christ would have us to live through the week. And that's part of the purpose of this sermon tonight, so that we might have a better influence upon those around us. Friends, I want you to consider, people are watching whether we realize it or not. I don't want to embarrass anybody tonight, but while Paul was leading singing, I took a look around for a moment and I saw one or two young men that were imitating Paul with the hand motions. And when Paul went into song and draw out the hand, guess what those young men did? Did the same thing. Paul may not even have seen that. May not even have known what kind of example that he's setting for our young men that aspire to be song leaders one day, but they're watching. Let me tell you a story for a moment, if you'll bear with me. My brother, my dad, and I believe I was at the Memphis School of Preaching. We decided to take a weekend, and we went up to St. Louis to watch a Cardinals baseball game. They were playing the Braves. My dad's a Braves fan. Me and my brother a Cardinals fan. So it was a perfect weekend for us to go up there. Except for the weather. It was raining. Had two or three rain delays during the course of the game. One about the third inning came along. The bottom just fell out and it began to rain. And there were some young men that had been sitting in front of us. I don't know where their parents were. I don't know if they bought them tickets and dropped them off or whatever the case. But they were probably in the range of 12, 13, 14 years old. They weren't that old. They were there they were very clearly there by themselves. Down two rows in front of them, after one such rain delay and several folks had left, some other, and I use this term loosely, gentlemen, sat down right in front of those two young men. And by about the fourth or fifth inning, they were very clearly drunk. And every other word out of their mouths were curse words. Now, up until this point, these two young men, they'd been very polite. They had, you could hear some of their conversation. Everyone, not that I was eavesdropping or anything now, but you could hear some of their conversation from time to time. And, they're very good at seeing young men. About the seventh inning, those young men, from the fifth to the seventh inning, two innings, the men that had sat down in front of these two young boys, they had exerted influence upon these two young men that they began to use the same type of language that those men were using. Using curse words that young men that age should never have even known about, and such like. Now, those men may never have known, they may never realize what type of influence they were upon those two boys today. And those parents may never realize the bad example that was set for those around their kids by those around them that day. But friends, in less than 30 minutes, those two young boys went from being, in my mind's eye at that point, from being good, upstanding young men, citizens of our community, to someone of a less desirable trait. All because they thought it was funny that these men were so drunk and they couldn't talk right and they were using speech unbecoming of what a Christian would use. And friends, consider that for a moment. Three things I want us to look at tonight. And the examples and the influence that we set for those around us. Oh, first of all, there are some bad examples. But we won't leave it there. We'll look at some good examples. And then, friends, of course, we want to look at the perfect example. First of all, let's look at some bad examples that we see. Some negative examples of influence that are all around us that we look at and we see today. First of all, consider, as I mentioned a moment ago, consider the lives of some celebrities. I'm sure with those that we have here tonight, many of us are familiar with the lady by the name of Marilyn Monroe. While she was an icon in her day, and even today, I've seen several people that probably never even seen a Marilyn Monroe movie that still dress up as her for Halloween. The one iconic picture that you see of her, and you know which one that I'm talking about. She's trying to keep herself covered. That just gives you a glimpse as to what type of woman morally that she was. You look at her example for those and the influence that she wielded upon women of her, of particularly her time. And friends, it was not good. I can't, and you go and you, if you were to Google her just tonight, if you want to look it up, just look and see how many times this woman was married in a very short period of time. Elizabeth, you could say the same thing with Elizabeth Taylor. Same type of deal. You can go back as we talked about the Roman period and the fullness of time in our Bible class, and how women of that day would count their, they would determine how old they were by the number of husbands they had. Friends, that's the type of influence that we see here at this time, and even carrying on now in Hollywood. That's the idea. You think about Bill Clinton and the influence that he, as the President of the United States, wielded. And while he may have been a great president politically speaking, friends, he was a sorry excuse of a man when it came to morals. And the example that he set for our entire country. You think of George Jones. Now, I love to listen to that man's music. What kind of influence does he set for those that would hold him up on a pedestal when it comes to his personal life? The man was nearly killed in a car accident because he was drunk and on a cell phone. He's known to have been, he's missed several shows because of his drinking habit. Friends, what kind of example, what kind of influence does that set for those aspiring young singers? Can't even begin to imagine. But then let's look at the Bible. You have several negative things there that influence the others around them. You look at David and his example to Solomon. If you go to let's turn to Deuteronomy 17 for a moment. I want us to look at this and notice something here. Now, David, remember, was called and known as a man after God's own heart. But David failed in several areas to set the proper example for his son, Solomon. Or sons, all of them, as it were. Begin reading with me in verse 14, if you will. Deuteronomy 17, verse 14. God knows that when they come into the land, they're going to ask for a king. And so he says, he gives them certain rules and laws here that they are to follow when they establish a kingdom, as it were. Look at this. When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, and shalt possess it, and shalt dwell therein, and shalt say, I will set a king over me, like as all the nations that are about me. So God knows you're going to ask for this. Look at verse 15. Thou shalt in any wise set him king over thee, whom the Lord thy God shall choose. God says, okay, you can have a king, but I will choose who it's going to be. Okay, look at this. One from among thy brethren shalt thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger over thee, which is not thy brother. But he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord has said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way. Neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. Now, friends, Saul did some of this, but you look at David, and David violated everything the Lord put right here in the law of Moses in Deuteronomy 17, 14 through 17. David had more than one wife. David had three or four wives, if I recall correctly, so he's already setting, he's not setting the proper example there for Solomon. But Solomon's mother, as a matter of fact, became his wife because of a sin that David had done previously. Couple of sins, as it were. So, what has Solomon got to look up to here? Now, true, David was a man after God's own heart, and that when he was confronted with sin, what did he do? He repented immediately. He wanted to be right with God. And so he was a man after God's own heart. But friends, he violated God's law here. You go and you look at the history of David, he multiplied horses to himself. And what the reason for this, friends, is so that that Israel would not trust in their own military might. They would understand that it was God that would fight their battles. But they strove to build their military like those nations around them as well. And what do you see Solomon falling into? Notice the whole reason that God gives for not multiplying wives unto himself, that his heart turned not away. And then Solomon, even as David became a rich king, Solomon took it a step further. Solomon multiplied these things, all of these things, unto himself. And I think, friends, I think we can come safely to the conclusion that a great deal of it had to do with what he saw in front of him sitting on the throne. You look at Solomon as well and the influence those women held over him. Friends, idolatry ran rampant in Solomon's kingdom later on in his life because these women had turned his heart from God. And he set up idols. He set up places of worship to these idols to keep his wives happy. And he went so far, friends, he went a step further in that he went and he offered sacrifice unto them. And then you see, of course, what happens. When his son comes to power, the kingdom is split. And it all goes back to David. It started there. What about the New Testament? You look at the Jewish influence over Pilate. Pilate had found Jesus innocent. He sent him to Herod. Herod found him innocent. Herod just thought it was crazy. So he comes back to Pilate, and Pilate says, okay, here's what I'll do. I will beat him, and I'll let him go, hoping that would satisfy their thirst for blood. It did not. They cried, crucify him, crucify him. So finally Pilate brought out some water. Symbolic, they washed his hands and said, see you to it. Friends, I cannot imagine the regret that Pilate must feel if he never came to believe in Jesus the Christ as he is sitting there in torments today. Knowing that he had the ability to let the Son of God go and he allowed a mob to hold influence over him. But you see that evil influence that you see. You see the influence that Jewish leaders had over Judas. Judas eventually committed suicide, and rather than having godly sorrow, he had that worldly sorrow. What about Herodias and her influence over her daughter and King Herod? You remember Herodias' daughter went and danced before King Herod in a very lascivious manner. And Herod, being drunk and not in his right mind, he made a promise to Herodias' daughter that I will give to you whatever you want up until the half of my kingdom. Of course, being a young girl, because that's what she was, went to her mother. Mother, what should I ask? And of course, if you remember, John had told Herod, it's not right for you to have Herodias. That's your brother's wife lawfully. So Herodias said, tell Herod to give you the head of John the Baptist on a platter. Of course, Herod didn't want to do it. He was fearful of the people knowing what they thought of John, even though he already had him in prison. He didn't want to kill him, but he remembered his promise and being a man of his word, as it were. He delivered the head of John the Baptist on the charger. You see the influence that one can have, and you read of that in Matthew 14, 3-11. Friends, even though as we look at the world around us and we see the abundance of evil influence recorded of those that were in the Bible for examples unto us so that we would not fall into that same trap, you look around us also and there are a few that are good. Let's notice again a few lives of a few celebrities that have used their influence for the good of others. I'm hesitant to use this first one, but let's remember that he did accomplish some good before the PED scandal, the performance enhancing drug scandal that has surrounded him lately. You look at Lance Armstrong and his Live Strong Foundation that has helped so much those that have faced cancer, and the great influence that he's had in that particular part of the world as far as those that battle those same things. You look at Christopher Reeve and his battle with paralysis after his accident. You're talking about Superman, right? And the hope that he gave so many that they could at least partially recover. I mean, they told Christopher Reeve there are so many things that he would never do again that he proved them wrong. They didn't believe he'd ever taught. Of course, he did that. What about Bob Hope and his development of the USO and the hope and the everything that he did for our demoralized troops in Vietnam and Korea? You see, there are a few of those around us, if we look hard enough. You're going to have to look hard. That still exert a positive influence when they can. We go back to the Bible, we look at the Old Testament. Of course, the first one that pops into my mind are Joshua and Caleb. And an entire nation that they were able to influence, at least those that were 20 years old and younger. They were able to look to Joshua and Caleb and understand this is how we follow God. You remember they go into the land and they spy it out, these two and 10 other spies. And they see that it's everything and more that God has told them it would be. But they say even though it's everything that God promises, and even though God told us that the land is ours, we can't go up and fight these people. There are giants that live in the land. We are as grasshoppers in their sight. It would be a fallacy for us to go up and try to battle these people. And of course, so you have the 10 over here, and then in Numbers 13 and verse 30. Perhaps one of the greatest motivational speeches ever made is made there by Caleb. Caleb stilled the people before Moses, and he said, "Let us go up at once. Let's not hesitate. Let us go up at once." Why? Because we are well able to overcome it. Why would Caleb say such a thing? Here you have 10 men saying, "We can't do it." But Joshua and Caleb stand over here, and Caleb says, "We can do it, and we can do it right now." Friends, who do you think when God said to Moses and the others there that you will not enter into the land of Canaan? And then they try to go and take the land anyway, and of course they failed miserably. Who do you think the young men and women are now looking up to when they realize whose side God is on? Don't you think that maybe they're looking to Joshua and to Caleb? And they're molding themselves after them. As a matter of fact, you look at Joshua. And you look at the end of the book of Joshua, and you see there that and the beginning of the book of Judges, that so long as Joshua lived, and that so long as the elders that outlived Joshua lived, that lived during Joshua's time and as he was the leader of the Israelites, and so long as those men lived and they had that influence of Joshua around them, they were faithful unto God. But the minute the last elder died, what do we see Israel doing? They dove right back into the depths of despair because they did not trust in God. So Joshua and Caleb hold a great example for me. What about Job? We use Job all the time when it comes to endurance and patience, don't we? And for good reason. You look at Job and everything this man endured. He lost everything. But his life, and he persevered, and he never lost his faith in God. As a matter of fact, even though it wasn't God that took all these things from him, what was his attitude toward everything that happened to him? God gives, God takes away. That's it. He continued to worship the God of heaven. When you think of Elijah, for a brief moment turned an entire nation back to God all by himself. In 1 Kings chapter 18, 17 through 40, we see there the story of Elijah against the prophets of Baal and the prophetesses of the groves. 450 prophets of Baal gathered before Elijah at Mount Carmel. And you remember the story that they built an altar. Elijah basically challenged them, said, "You build an altar, I'll build an altar. You slay a bull, I'll slay a bull. We'll pray to our gods, and the one that answers and brings fire down from above and consumes our offering, that is the God of heaven." And he even allowed them extra time, didn't he? He allowed them under midday. They started early in the morning. He allowed them somewhere in the neighborhood of about 6 hours to pray to Baal. What happened? Absolutely nothing. And so he builds his altar. He slays his bull.
and he digs a trench. He goes a step further now. He digs a trench all the way around his altar and his bull. And he says, bring water and fill it up. Now remember, at this time there had been 3.5 years of drought. We think we're dry. 3.5 years of drought. So what's going to happen as soon as that water hits the ground? It's going to soak it up. Right? But Elijah brought enough water that the surrounding ground soaked up enough that it formed a seal, and water held in that trench. Not only that, friends, not only did he pour it in the trench, he poured it all over his offering. Now, how many of you ever tried to light wet wood? How well does that work? It doesn't, does it? He prays to God for about, I'm not going to put time limit on his prayer, but let's say 30 seconds to a minute. It wasn't going to take long. And immediately fire fell from heaven. It consumed not only the bullet, but the wood and the altar and the water in the trench. There was nothing left whatsoever. Now, everybody had heard Elijah's challenge. So what must they now be, what do they see with their own eyes? Who is the God of heaven? Baal? Or Jehovah? It has to be Jehovah. So Elijah was able to turn an entire nation back to God all by himself. Elijah shows us what one man can do with faith in God. Look to the New Testament, and you look at Paul. We talked about Paul briefly this morning. Paul was a man who before had led many to their deaths, but after his conversion, he suffered just what he had been inflicting on other Christians. You look at 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Paul found it necessary to defend himself before the Corinthians. The Corinthians were telling Paul, basically, or saying about Paul, well, we've got these men that are over here preaching this, and they, here's what they've suffered, this, and this, because of what they've preached. Paul, what have you suffered? But Paul says, you know me. You know what I have done. But if you really want to get into these things, here's what takes place. So in 2 Corinthians 11, 24 through 29, here's what we see of Paul. And the example that he sets there, not only for the Corinthian brethren, but even for us here today. Friends, he was beaten because of his faith and his preaching in Christ Jesus. 5 times he was beaten by his own brethren, by Jews. 3 times he was beaten with rods that did not have the same restrictions that the Jews had upon beatings that were administered. 1 time they stoned him and left him for dead. Because he was preaching for the cause of Christ, 2 times he was shipwrecked. Or was it 3 times? The night and a day he spent in the deep. My friends, I don't know anybody that has spent any time in the Mediterranean. I know I haven't, but I can read what the average water temperature there is. There's a very good chance that by the time Paul got out of that water, he was into the first or second stages of hypothermia. Friends, he suffered for the cause of Christ. But friends, he used those sufferings, and he gave these examples for a reason, so that when we face, and when the Corinthians would face, when others would face these same things, because they had faith in God and they would preach Christ crucified, that they would know that they could endure. And friends, he tells us to use that example. To understand, friends, that we can get through these things. You look at Stephen. Stephen, when he understood in Acts chapter 7 that he had pricked them in their heart, and he understood, I know, friends, that as well as you do, that when you're talking with someone and you can tell when someone's starting to get agitated, can't you? So I know that Stephen had to be standing there preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, and he's looking out at the faces of the people that are standing before him, and he sees they're getting angry. He sees they're working themselves now into a frenzy, but Stephen didn't say, oh, I better shut up. I better be quiet. What did he do? Continued to preach. And they came, friends, and the Bible says they gnashed on him with their teeth. Now you think about the meaning of that for a moment. It doesn't mean they gave him a tongue lashing. They began to beat that man and bite that man and everything else they could to try to get him to be quiet as they drug him outside of the city so that they could stone him to death. And yet, what do we see Stephen's attitude as the first stone is flying toward him? He had the same attitude of Jesus, didn't he? Father, forgive me. Same type of attitude. What kind of example, friends, is that give us? Even at his death, Stephen shows the model Christian attitude in saying, lay not this sin to their charge. How many of us, friends, could have that same type of attitude and show others around us that example? But what about our perfect example in Jesus Christ? Jesus is the one and only perfect example. He's the only perfect man to ever walk the face of this earth, and it's our duty, friends, to strive to be like Him in every way. That's what the word Christian means, after all. I know you've heard it said 1,000 times, but that's what Christian means, Christ-like. Let me ask you this, how Christ-like are we Monday through Saturday? When we're in the workplace, when we're at school, we have those evil worldly influences around us. Christ's suffering, through scourging and hanging on the cross, friends, should be an example to us all of the love that He had for us. For God so loved the world, friends, that includes you and I, that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him, implied in that is obedience, should not perish but have everlasting life. Friends, He loved us so much that He was willing to go to the cross for us, even as you see as He prayed there in the garden. He didn't want to go. He didn't want to die. What man in his right mind would want to have nails driven through his hands and his feet? What man in his right mind would want to be whipped with a cat of nine tails? It's the closest thing I know to the whip that they used at that time. How many of us would want to suffer those things? How many of us would want, as the first century Christians did, to be burned at the stake, to be wrapped in green animal hides and thrown to lions and tigers and bears? Oh my. How many of us would want to do those things? And Christ did it, not because He wanted to, friends, but because He loved you. That's why He suffered the things that He suffered. That's why, friends, even though He had the power to call 10,000 angels, He allowed Himself to be slapped with an open palm across the face. That's why He allowed them to pluck His beard, to drive crowns of thorns into His skull, to be beaten to within an inch of his life, and finally to suffocate slowly upon a cross, the height of humiliation, as he hung there most likely with not a stitch of clothing on. That, friends, is the legacy and example that He leaves for us. If He would do that for me, what type of life should I live for Him? What kind of example and influence should I try to exert upon those around me for Him? Christ gave us that example. He also gave us that example of prayer. I'm not going to go into great detail about that because we discussed His prayer a couple of weeks ago. But the example that He gave us there, and how many times, friends, do we see Him separating Himself from everyone and everything else to spend time alone with His Father? Great example that we find there. And friends, His fight against temptation probably is one of His greatest examples that He leaves for us. In Matthew chapter 4, 1 through 11, He's led out into the wilderness, been been fasting for 40 days and 40 nights. And so the devil's going to hit him where it hurts right to begin with, right? This man is hungry. Let's see if he wants some food. And of course, each time the devil brought a temptation before him, Jesus replied, "It is written." How did he do that? Friends, he knew the scriptures. He knew the scriptures. Let's strive, friends, to know the scriptures as Jesus knew the scriptures. Let's strive to pray as he did, friends. Let's strive to show his love to the world around us. Let's put away our Bibles. Let's take out our psalm. Let's read and sing the invitation psalm here in just a moment. Friends, consider this as we go out to live our day-to-day lives. What kind of examples must we be? Going back to Matthew chapter 5, 14 through 16, we see that we are to be a light unto the world, both individually and congregationally. Friends, when we go out into the world, and we're with those in our workplace, we're with those that are around us at school or even at the supermarket. Not only, friends, are you representing you in your own name, but you represent the name of Christ. We need to remember that, so that we don't bring shame upon the name of Christ. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12, Paul wrote there to Timothy that he was to be an example or ensample to the believers or of the believers. Either case, it works just the same. If he is to be an example of the believers, it's so that the world around can see what a believer is supposed to be. If he's to be an example to the believers, it works the same way, in that those others that claim to believe in Christ, they can understand how they ought to act as well. And Paul wrote that to Timothy, that we are to be examples in word and conversation, that we are to have tongues that speak no evil and lips that speak no guile. Paul writes to Titus in Titus 2, 7 and 8 that we are to show ourselves in a pattern, he says, of good works. In doctrine, showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. He tells the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 5 that we are to examine ourselves. I shared with you Wednesday night that story of Christopher Kerr and his friend named Kyle. And how, friends, that one event in Kyle's life changed the course of his life forever. Christopher didn't know Kyle. He didn't have to go over and pick up that young man's glasses. He didn't have to invite him to play football with him and his friends on Saturday. He didn't have to do those things. And it probably wouldn't have been no skin off his nose. It wouldn't have mattered to him one whit, because he didn't know who he was, if Kyle had been allowed to go on home and kill himself. But because the young man stopped and picked up his glasses, offered him a smile and invited him to play some football, they became best friends. The young man became valedictorian and he went to Duke. Friends, you think about that. Next time you come across somebody, you don't understand. We may not understand what somebody's going through, but understand that a kind word may change somebody's life, whether you realize it or not. Friends, when we leave this evening, and we go out and into the world, back to our respective jobs and back to our respective lives, let us strive to be the proper example and exert the proper influence on those around us for the glory of our Father in heaven. That was the conclusion of what Jesus said in that context in verse 16, wasn't it? That those around us may see our good works and not glorify you, not glorify me, but who? Our Father, which is in heaven. Friends, let us strive to be a representative of Christ to all those around us. Let us be the proper example. A friend, it may be that you're here this evening having never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. Would you follow the example of those of the first century, believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God,
Repenting of sin, confessing him before men, and being baptized, immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins. Would you follow that example this evening? Friend, it may be that you're here and you've done that. But you've fallen away. You've left the church, you put God in your rearview mirror. Friend, would you come home? Would you be his again? Follow the example of Simon in Acts chapter 8. Knowing, friend, that you've sinned, come home. Ask for the prayers of the church. Ask for forgiveness from the Father in heaven so that your soul may be restored. And friend, if tonight is your last night upon this earth, that one day at the judgment you may hear, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Friend, would you come while we stand and while we sing?